Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first episode of the Evil Dead Retrospective. I am the tree hugger, Trasnail, and I'm joined by...
I'm the necromancer, Kirkland Patzer.
I am the possessed, Dylan Moss.
I'm Book of the Dead, Taylor Field.
Yes, yes, and we are doing this retrospective not just because of S-Bubs, he had asked a few times, but we are doing this because in April, Evil Dead Rise is coming out. It is the fifth entry into the Evil Dead saga, franchise, whatever it may be. You know, there's a video game out there as well, which I'm excited to play because at this time it's free on PlayStation Plus, so I'm excited to get in there and try it out for the first time at some point. But yes, this is going to be looking back at the majority of Sam Raimi doing Evil Dead, and then there's one other one as well. But yeah, there's four films, so we'll be doing all four. We'll watch Rise, of course. We'll do a rankings episode or rankings cut on news, stuff like that. But yeah, Taylor Field, where can they find all that good jazz that we do? Everything.
Which tons you of can stuff. Find us with your internet connection in the search bar. Geekverse.ca is our home base. Geekverse Cast is our Twitter, and Geekverse is our Facebook.
Yeah, everything we do, it's down below. Evil Dead Retro, we're starting now. Patrons, you'll be getting John Wick already. You could be an X-Men one. We're doing Indiana Jones coming up soon. Ooh. We're doing Defoe one later on in the year, which you, the patrons, are going to get to vote and decide what we do. We're going to do like a one-off. We're going to do Mario. We're going to do an Oscar movie one. So we got some fun Patreon retros coming up there. That's why we want to join the Patreon producer tier, because you get to vote on the content and choose. And a big thank you to everyone on that tier on Patreon and that listens because of you guys. That's why these shows happen, is because of your support. So, Evil Dead. So, you know, I'm going to take the baton. I never get to start. I want to start about this. So, I can't tell you about the first time I saw this, because I got to wait till Evil Dead 2. And there's like a better story there. But I had seen 2 before I saw 1. But anyway, so we'll get to that when we get to 2. But I think with this movie, there's two minds of it. As a, just watching as a film, I love it. It's... yeah, there's some cheesy and low budgetness to it, but like, it's scary. It has a great pace to it. It just goes up and up. I just feel like the way that when we watch Hereditary or Midsommar or Lighthouse, I imagine that's how people must have felt in 81, like seeing this. Like, nowadays you see this stuff, you go, oh yeah, we've seen some crazy shit. But back then, it's just like some of the things that happened, like including my name. I saw this at a young age, just like couldn't believe like what's going on in this with the film and stuff like that. So the film, it's a quick everything. I love it. I've seen it almost so many times that I feel like I didn't need to watch for this retrospective, but I love the film. The more what I like about it is just like, it's just the definition of like rock and roll independent filmmaking. It has a budget of $375,000, and I got some trivia, but it's just like, I'll read some facts, but go on the IMDb and read this. I want them to do like a full-on documentary, because like what they did to get this movie going, and that thing, it's just like Sam Raimi's first movie. It's balls to the wall. They just go for it, and it's just like, it's a small crew. And again, like to me, it's not even $1 million budget. And I don't think it feels like lower tier as far as like what you could imagine what a big movie might be look like, but I think what they did with what they had is incredible. Like, this is like a guy that had nothing to his name, him and Bruce oh god, why am I forgetting
Campbell. His last name?
Thank you. They're like taking out loans and stuff from banks just to get this, and like it's just such a, it's someone that like wants to do the filmmaking thing. When I watch, it's like, man, they really did something special and found like kind of lightning in a bottle. And that's why the second one's a bit different, because they had a bigger budget and there's a whole different spin to it. But this first one, I'm always so impressed with it, and it's just genuinely scary. It's one of these movies that I do watch every Halloween, and it's just some of the sounds these creatures make and some of the visuals and how it ramps up to just being, oh, something scary in the woods, to where we get the end. It's just some awful stuff. So I absolutely love this movie. But Dylan Moss, have you had any experience with Evil Dead? And if not, what did you think of this go-around for yourself?
Yeah, really no experience whatsoever. I feel like I only heard about it maybe when you guys talk about it on the podcast here or there, or more recently in recent times with S-Bubs, just knowing that he's always praising these things. But I remember like even when we did the Spider-Man No Way Home review, and Bruce Campbell has like that character in there, like on the review, I had to ask you guys, like, I don't know who this guy is. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen him in a movie before. Had no idea who he was. So I really didn't, like, I guess I never thought about, well, what did Sam Raimi do before Spider-Man? I never thought back on his career in that way. So yeah, never seen any of these movies, and truthfully, I don't really know anything about them. I know Bruce Campbell's in there.
Yeah,
I assume there's some sort of undead. That is it. Like, I feel like these ones have somehow remained maybe cult movies in a way that they 100%. Are not a point where like everyone's spoiling things. There's like there's some iconic scene that people are always referencing. I feel like it's lived in obscurity, which kind of I guess fits for what it is. And you know, Travis, you're talking about so much about like how the rock and roll nature of this and how it's so hard to make it and how this is Sam Raimi's first movie. Mm-hmm. To me, you know, I look at it from outside of all that. This felt absolutely like this is someone's first time making a movie. I did not like this pretty much at all. There was honestly very little in here that I found any value in. This movie was absolutely not for me. And, you know, there's an element to it where it's like, okay, you can try and remove yourself from your situation and think back. This came out so long ago, yeah. 40 years ago, and maybe I can give it some concessions for doing that. But at the same time, that's not going to like really drastically improve my enjoyment of it. And it sounds like the story of the making this is interesting. So that's cool. I'd like to look into that. But yeah, in terms of like, I did not find this scary pretty much at all. There's a couple effects elements that I thought looked cool, but for the most part, didn't really work for me. I don't need a woman getting raped by a tree in my movies. Like that to me, crazy. Like just does not... It's just so cringe and not in like a good cringe. It's just like, this is stupid. So yeah, there's very little I liked about this. I think the characters, like Bruce Campbell's character's fine. I think he just has like it's weird. He's never, I don't know, maybe he's had like a really powerful career or something, but he just has like movie star energy to him in this. Like I got that vibe, even though like I don't know anything else about him, but everyone else is just like, whatever. So I'm sorry, S-Bubs. I'm sorry to everyone who loves this, but I can't wait to hear why at least Travis and presumably you other two like this thing. But yeah, it did very, very little for me.
You're not alone though. There's many people that aren't a fan of these movies, especially as we go on, the tongue-in-cheek nature gets a lot more heavy and stuff like that. Okay. It starts to lean into the more comedic side and yeah, it's I think that's probably the reason why they are more of the cult followings, because they're not a wildly loved ones. But Kirk and Patzer, had you ever seen any Evil Dead? And if so, where are you on this?
I absolutely have. Evil Dead has a big standing in the Patzer household. My whole family, we watched this. Again, I was probably well too young to watch it, but for some reason, my dad just thought I was ready, and like we reference so many just lines and sequence from these movies, like in my household, especially like at my family's house or at my family's house, at my parents' house. They have like a trap door situation, which is just like the Evil Dead door, where they have like, oh, it's not an actual chain on theirs, but like every time we go down there, I'm just picturing some like possessed person to grab me or whatnot. And like, we just always reference it as like the Evil Dead door, and then just like, swallow your soul. That wasn't in this movie. It's in a later one. But like, we love this movie so much. And I think it is very much that though, where like, from Dylan's point of view, like if I didn't have any of those like memories and just watched it like now, I probably wouldn't have like it wouldn't have hit hard like at all, and I probably would have been more on his side of this. But yeah, just like I remember being a little kid and like seeing the first time like some of these characters just get possessed, and like fuck, just the gore involved like in it. And like I knew it was his first movie, Sam Raimi. I knew it was a lower budget. I didn't realize it was $375,000. Like, to me, that's crazy with how much, like, just blood and gore and guts and stuff that they were, like, showing in these scenes. And, yeah, it's dated, but I think, again, it's probably because I'm bringing in my own, like, love and enjoyment for it. But, like, I just see these scenes and appreciate it so much more for the fact that it is, a lower budget and how they were able to execute. Like, you call it like a low budget like camera shot, but I just think it's like so clever the way that they just have it like on Bruce Campbell's face in like certain moments, whether he's reacting to a scene or when he first goes down in the basement, and it just does like the little panoramic shot around like very slowly. Like, I remember being a little kid in that scene and just waiting for something to like jump out. Like, I was just so on the edge of my seat, and like this movie very much scared the shit out of me as a young kid. And just like the whole lore with like, I think they call it the Book of the Dead. I've heard it called like the Necronomicon. Just like the book that's made out of like human skin, and there's just like a face on it. Like, that's just such a creepy concept. And then when you read it, like just the spirits come out to get you. So yeah, I've seen this movie. I like probably like 5 times in my entire life, but like it's been a while since I have seen it. So there was a lot of moments that I kind of forgot the way that they went. Like I knew like the main, like, I guess you'd call it like the landmark scenes, like throughout the film. Mm-hmm. But the way that we got there was kind of, it was kind of out of my memory. So it was very fun to watch this one again. And yeah, I think I'm just always going to have like a special place in my heart, for this movie, because like I said, like my family and I, especially like me and my dad, like we just always reference certain scenes from not just this movie, but like throughout the Evil Dead series. Especially like I'm excited to get to those other ones again, because I feel like I've seen this one the most and the most recent, other than the latest remake. I saw that around the time when that one came out. But so yeah, I think it's gonna be a fun retro for sure, especially like Travis, you're alluding to just how much more comedic it kind of gets. I remember that shift as a wee young lad, so I'm excited to go through it again, and yeah, I'm excited to just dive into this one.
Mr. Field.
So this would be my first time actually watching this one.
Oh.
I've watched Evil Dead 2, Armory of Darkness, the new remake one, that I watched Ash vs. Evil Dead a few times. I love all those.
You've watched the show, I'm surprised, and still not the first one.
I love the show. Holy shit. Ash vs. Evil Dead is fantastic. But this one, I don't think I ever got around to it because it just kind of confused me. Because the second one, I see people talking like it's a reboot, sequel, remake, whatever. And so yeah. I just kind of thought like, oh.
It's weird.
I just never went back to go and watch this one, I guess. And like... Like the second one is the one I've watched a lot of, and that one, like, we'll talk more about that when we get to that retro. But going into this one, I thought it was interesting because I've seen that remake, and the remake and this one have like, it's cool where I can see like, okay, they've connected things. And when I'm watching this one, I think, okay, like I can kind of predict like where we're gonna kind of go, like with certain story paths here. And I thought, like, okay, they're doing this. And there are other things I thought, well, they're definitely not going to do this because, like, I didn't see this represented any of the other Evil Dead content. So I imagine this is something that they did new that was in the remake. But then, no, they did it in this original one. I thought, okay, that's cool. So the remake pulled from this and all that kind of stuff. Like, the tree scene, which, again, I don't really need that in my horror movies
either. It's full shock horror. Like, that's what it is.
Shock, all right.
Yeah.
But I think that the universe and the backstory between the Necronomicon and the Deadites and everything that they kind of create, I think it's very interesting. I think the way I see it, if you get maimed by one of these things, you're fucked. And the concept of using the camera as whatever this entity is, it's like cruising through, is such it leaves it up to your imagination what this thing could be. And I really, really like that, and it's something that I've never seen in a movie before. I think this is definitely the kind of like a camera work that's kind of put its stamp down of like certification, like, yeah, we've done this first, and like this is our deal. Like you said, Kirkland, doing close-up shots of like Campbell's expressions and stuff like that. There's a lot of different angles that they work well with. And while they didn't need to do, I don't know, I can't remember if there was really any kind of CGI stuff like that. Like, it was a lot of practical effects. The second
stop
one
motion.
Yeah, the second yeah, one has the like amount of that CGI. but like this one, yeah, the use of practicality, I appreciated it. So
I don't think CGI like technically existed back then. It was just like special
it's the special effects. Like, I mean, like the Evil Dead 2 level special effects, because I think this had maybe a tiny fraction of something in it. But
well, like Dylan referred to, I think you're talking about like when things start to melt and stuff in the books and everything, like they all start to rot and stuff, or you think of that scene?
Yeah, the hands came out of their bodies and stuff.
Yeah, which stands out because it's like the whole movie's been very gritty, dirty, realistic, and I like what they're going for, but it's just like it looks very, I don't know. I don't know if that works the best, but I get what they're going for. Like, it looks almost too fantastical for what it is. It looks almost too bright. And look, like that thing is probably some sort of clay or something like that, where it's, but I get what they're trying. Sure.
It reminded me of Indiana Jones and the Lost Ark, right? When they're like melting and like, it's just everything's falling off. So I am like, because it's an 81 movie, like I just kind of look at it and I'm like, man, like good on them for like,
that's
just
what they could do.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like going through all that effort of doing the stop motion, because that's very much what it looked like. And that would have been a long time to do those scenes. I know Dylan's had some experience with the stop motion. It can be pretty pretty stressful.
Big career in
your YouTube chat still live. Go support, subscribe. Yeah,
send those super chats. You know.
Yeah, Taylor, you mentioned you reminded me too with the like the spirit cam, I guess, of like following with like the car in the beginning and at the end, like going to Bruce Campbell. I can't remember if it was like Halo, Call of Duty, or CS:GO or something, but one of those games had like a free cam when you were dead and you could just move it around like that. And I just remember always I just like felt like I was like that spirit from Evil Dead, just like gunning through, like you're just like getting closer and closer to a character. Just the little games I would have with myself.
I think CS:GO definitely did that, because I remember being in my friend's basement. That's just what you would do when you were dead and stuff like that. And
yeah,
that's the stuff where I just look at it, I go like, how did they pull some of this stuff off? Because like some of it's just them with a camera running around, but just like it doesn't ever to me feel like that. It does feel like it's a floating thing. Like there is one funny story where Bruce Campbell, like the one over water, they had like Sam Raimi on some sort of like sheet of wood or something, so he had to like push Sam in the water while he was doing the shot, but he wasn't touching the water. There's like all these tricks they use, and that's what I love about it. But yeah, that I love. It's just this ominous, just always, and right when you think it's over, it's always back, and it could get you at any moment, and you don't know because you think, can it break through glass and doors? And at the beginning of the movie it can't, but then at the end when it's just tearing through those doors, and even then, like, I'm looking at the doors, okay, how do they pull this off? How do they do this? Like, it's just, they're very lucky they found this location and stuff like that. So
This is something I do when I watch Goosebumps, specifically the slappy episodes.
Wow.
When I watch Evil Dead as well, and they're reading off the verse, I'll actually mute my TV just to mute a couple lines, because
it scares me.
I kid you not, it just scares me like fucking daylights out. And the same with Slappy too, Goosebumps. I gotta mute that shit because I don't want fucking something coming alive or anything.
With Slappy, do you ever ventriloquist puppet just sitting around?
I don't know. You don't read the lines.
Just staring at him. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But I think a good place to start is like kind of what Dylan said. I think that the reason you still see him and stuff in Bruce Campbell, I think, and it's funny because he got a co-producer credit on this, like, and he put a lot of his own money into this, and this made him a star. And I think you can I wonder what this movie is like without him, you know. And this is coming from someone that likes it, but it is like he's such a big anchor. And I think that's why he did three of them, and the fans, and the show, of course, and fans are such a big, like, proponent for him always trying to be in these, especially Ash. Ash, the character, became like a very, especially after 2, becomes a very iconic horror character, because 2, it's very much just a, even more so, just a solo Bruce Campbell type of deal. And I think he does hold it down. He's still like Bright Eye and Bushy Tails. There's still some overacting, but I guess for me, this is one of those movies where the overacting kind of works. It's almost similar to like a Lighthouse point of view, where it can be so cheesy and over the top and just kind of eye rolly, but it kind of works in this scenario. So, but Bruce Campbell, yeah, he holds it down. And I think if you didn't have him, it would be there might not be a franchise to retrospective, you know, like that's the thing. So big fan of Bruce Campbell in here, and happy it all worked out for him, you know.
Very kind of random question for you guys. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is just like answer to number 2 and we don't need to go into it or anything like that. But like, I'm just curious what's going on with how they get kind of infected or turned. Because to me, it seemed like obviously the one girl got the tree deep inside of her. And that's what, and then from that point, it seemed like whenever she was drawing blood or stabbing or scratching someone, that infected them. But like, I swear he gets scratched or something multiple times.
His whole leg gets fucking like,
yeah, exactly, the leg.
Yeah.
So is he just immune, or what's going on with him? Is he like a chosen one situation, or am I missing something here?
Kinda, but he's like, I would say the best way is he's not immune, and then you'll learn about that. But like, there he's not immune, and there is a chosen one sort of situation. It's kind of both and stuff like that. It's a weird thing, but like, I agree with you that the rules aren't. It's more so he's the main character, and he can't probably, you know, he got to get affected at the end or not get infected and stuff like that. And maybe there is some deeper reason of why certain characters, if it's like a mind over matter thing, if it's a sort of thing like because of like your willpower or something, but they don't really stress that too much. It just seems like for a while it's like, okay, you get the pencil, well, she is down, like I get scratched. Mm-hmm. But then Ash, yeah, a bunch of stuff does happen to him, and he does make it out at the end of it, you know. So and I'm not sure if it's just because can like if there can does there always have to be like one normal person kind of around? Like, because if he turns evil, what's he supposed to do? Like, there's no one left for him to kill, right? So it's like, do they even want him at that point? Because there's nothing. But maybe when he wins and he's going out in the free world, that's why this thing's going to latch on to him. Like, oh, he's actually going to escape. Let's bring that out there. You know, let's take that and see what that's gas station may go to and stuff. So,
well, I was wondering about that too. I think with Linda's the character's name, she is like, you know, doing her thing. She's sitting on the ground, just like squealing. There's so much squealing in this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's a loud movie.
It's very loud movie.
Oh, yeah.
But at one point, she's fully evil. Her face is transformed. But then she goes back and she's normal for a bit. And then, like, you know, at some point, the camera turns away and then she starts squealing again. So was she evil the whole time? And that was like a choice that she can like appear back, or did she genuinely turn back into a normal person for a bit there? What's going on there?
Genuinely.
Mind games.
It's, yeah. Mind it's, games. That's something you learn later on. Like, just they take advantage of people's, like, emotions.
And weaknesses, yeah. No, I think that's all it is. They just,
that's fun. I like
just
that.
Trying to trick you into a false sense of hope that, okay, it's all better. Because they always say, that, like, oh, it's going to be fun. That's one of my favorite quotes is, like, all the stuff has gone down. She, like, the first girl has, like, freaked out and everything like that. And she, like, they have her locked in a basement. And then the other buddy that's not Ash is just like, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. At this point, like, it's definitely not going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Even when your friend's locked up. And, like, I do love the line of just, like, what, like, oh, man, I got goosebumps just thinking about it. I got to pull up the IMDb because I know some like, you're not that big of a fan. You don't know all their names. But as Dylan said, the rest of the characters aren't really much to write home about. But when Ash's girlfriend just says that line of what happened to her eyes, that has always stuck with me because it's just like, it is, they're just so deadshot. Now, I will say that the makeup, I think it's back and forth of the ones I like and the ones I don't. Like when Ash's girlfriend gets the...
That was Linda, right? Because Cheryl was the one with the eyes.
It's whoever's Linda's locked in the basement.
Okay. Yeah, that was so, Cheryl, like, I'm pretty sure.
When Linda turns evil, they just got her with some like capsules and like it's makeup. It doesn't look anything like that crazy. But the first
I feel like they don't
one...
even put the makeup on the neck, right? Like, they
no,
don't.
Yeah.
The very, like, they don't even do the stuff. Side of the face. Like it's just like the front.
And like legitimately part of that is because like halfway throughout the movie, they had no more budget. So I guarantee you that's where part of it was that they had nothing left to spend. And like that's why there's lots of time I have this in the trivia that Bruce Campbell had to play like the characters when he didn't see their face or to the side. Like he had to do scenes as other characters because they shot half the movie and the other people had to go, but Bruce Campbell stayed to finish it. And that's why it's mostly him at the end. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff where if you
that's
like
hilarious.
It's him having to be that character. But yeah, it's when Cheryl turns, I really like her makeup. I love the look. I love the darkness they use in the cellar and all that stuff. And when it is just like you just see those eyes and they're like glowing, that stuff is stuck with me. And that's where the movie, every time I have to watch it, it's nighttime because of kids, but I have to have it muted or so loud or so like quiet because they
so loud
they took that treble and bass and just turned it all the way up. And I could not even imagine watching this in the theaters. This must have been fucking just like your mind must just been on fire.
Yeah. It's very iconic sounds. It almost like reminds me of like Nazi zombies when you're playing that, and just like the sounds of like the creatures making. And I mean, like it just like it goes in like the evil category. Like these things are not like it's no redeeming. Like, oh, you're gonna get them back. Like this is just pure evil. And the way that they fuck with our characters, and like you shouted out already to Link when the character that's possessed goes back to like the human form and just like mess with them. Like it seems like the creatures, the possessed ones are messing with Bruce Campbell, or I could call him Ash, like even without switching back. Like the way that I can't remember if it was Linda or Cheryl, but she's just like sitting in the doorway, Linda, just like super creepy smile just doing her little like cackle, just like why is she there? Like why is she there? Just so he doesn't leave, or just to completely fuck with him and get under his skin? It's just like that aspect to the characters. I think just really stuck with me as a young one, because it's like, why aren't they just attacking him? Like isn't that what they want to do here? No, they're like fucking with him. It hits me.
that was a weird element. Like the whole way through, there was several scenes where there's like one of the evil possessed characters is like standing right in front of them, and the rest of the characters are just like standing around. Like, they have no reaction. They're not like, okay, let's grab a weapon. They're not like, let's get out of this. Let's lock the door. Let's save each other. Like, they just stand around, and it was just weird to me. It reminded me of the second Fantastic Beasts movie, I remember having that criticism of the movie, how there's just often characters in the background where clearly there was like no writing for them, but they're still there and they're just mm-hmm. not reacting to what's going on. I just had that multiple times in this movie where there's like, yeah, an evil character right in front of them, but they just have no reaction to it. It's very bizarre to me.
And there's one thing I like that after everything goes down, sure, not everything, but when they got her, like this traumatic event happened, she wants to go and she can't. They just like resort to playing cards. I just always laugh where it's just like the shit has hit the fan and like, well, let's just play some cards and she's going to be okay. Like that portion is there's time where I go, okay, yeah, there's some things in here that don't necessarily work. And I think it is. I don't know if it's a combo of a first film or if, other than Ash, like, I don't think any of these people went on to really do much other things, right? So it's just, like, doing the best you can with the crew. But
they should have stayed on set longer instead of leaving, as you said.
Oh, you'll see. It got to be a bad situation where they had to live and stuff. So it was, some stuff went down. But what was I going to say? Sorry, Kurt, you were going to say something before.
I wanted to add on to the scene where you got goosebumps, where it's just like her eyes and they just keep like fixating on that. I love so much about that scene, but like particularly how it's shot. Like it's basically from the perspective of Cheryl, like the possessed one yeah. in the basement, and she's just like looking at them, and then like the actors are looking at the camera. It's just like, look at her eyes. Like it's just it's so freaky because us, like in that moment, like we can't even see the eyes, but like yeah. Well, we did already, but in that moment we don't, and it's just the noises that she's making, just like clawing out, trying to get out of that basement door. The basement, I feel like that's the most iconic thing for me throughout this entire series.
Oh, 100%. And that's what's funny is because I feel like them as the human actors are not the greatest, but I feel like all of them put 110% effort into the being the possessed, and they're just like, for better or worse, whether it's sounds or the way they're throwing their body, they're in it. They're making me believe that they've been possessed, and it's Cheryl's the worst one for creeping me. Like I still think about it.
Something I found funny is like the basement, yeah, like the cellar door busts open, so they go down there, and then eventually they don't find anything, right? They just find like the book, and the audio recorder. They come back up. But that was so funny to me that like they just all seem to forget about that they're like, oh yeah, something did bust that cellar open. They never found what it was, and they just like forgot about it and moved on. And it was like, it could have just been an animal, but it's like, it would have been a big animal. Wouldn't you have seen that? I thought it was funny that they just eventually forgot about that. They got distracted by all these goodies in the basement, which to an extent is understandable, but it just never comes up again. What was in the basement originally?
Well, and that's what they kind of like, and I think that's why I'm very curious to know if you watch the second one, if you end up liking that one more, because I feel like
I want to keep going. I want to see what's going on with these movies, so I'll keep watching.
It's tough because I have the knowledge of the other ones, and it feels like with the second one they get more comedic and they lean into that, and that's why I always wonder, is this first one supposed to try and invoke that kind of comedic stuff, but at times it's trying to be so serious that it just doesn't work and it kind of comes off as silly, where the other ones start to lean into it. So I don't know if it's that kind of egg or chicken situation of, this really worked in that first one, I want to do more of that, or it just didn't work the best here. But yeah, they're all a bunch of like dumb like all the stuff they want to do just doesn't make, they are the quintessential iconic dumb characters that they're getting killed off one by one. They're not making the best decisions. They don't question what's going on. Like even what happens when Cheryl comes back, like of course you're probably not gonna believe her story about a tree, but still I wouldn't be able to sit down and just play cards and hang out and just, oh well, I think it's gonna be okay, like Cheryl just had a bad night, you know. It's like, no, she's speaking about some crazy stuff right now, you know. So
when that guy went off because he's like, oh, she's your girlfriend,
Scott,
not mine. Yeah, Scott, when he goes off and he's 110% when he's leaving because he's all not hurt or anything like that, he literally because that it was weird why Linda, like Ash didn't do anything with Linda. Like Linda came out, was in the hallway sitting there, and like Ash like is like freaking out by her, but like goes to the door, and then this is like 2 minutes later, Scott's back in there fucking beat to shit. He's just not looking good, puts him down on the couch, but then Ash goes to like stoke the fire and Linda's just sitting there. It's like, this is weird.
Yeah, Scott's quite a, he's just there to be the aggressor of the situation and stuff like that. And I love to, at one point when they're just like, I can't remember the exact dialogue it went up, but their whole big plan is here is to escape. Like they're just gonna bury, and this is before like the whole like ritual, they're just gonna bury one of the girls, and it's just I keep thinking about like what are they gonna say when they get back into town. Like I always play that in mind of like what's gonna happen, like how do you explain any of this, which of course just like they're not gonna leave and stuff like that.
Do they ever explain whose cabin they're going to?
I don't think so.
Well, they said they got a good deal on it, but yeah. Like I wasn't sure if that's meant that they bought
Airbnb
it.
Airbnb of
just...
the 80s, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's exactly. Just rented. Yeah, but I don't know if it's one of these things that ends up being like it was fate that she had to go there, because like for my spoilers, Dylan, the whole second movie also takes place in the cabin, so it's one of those things.
The same cabin.
The same cabin. Oh, yes, the same cabin. So yeah, I think it's kind of a like. I guess it could have been a good deal, but it almost like there was a fate
too good of a deal.
Got them. Yeah, exactly. Like somehow fate got them.
Someone
there.
Was trying to pull them there. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Got to get them out of there. But yeah, what Kirk, when you were talking about the basement, those were actually, that's different location. So the cabin, everything, that's there. But then the trap door in the basement, that they filmed at a different location. So that wasn't just one set and everything like that. So, but yeah, no, I think for me, I also just like that, you know, obviously it gets a little loud at time, but I love all the set designs. I love like everything is loud, and it's not loud in a way. There is a couple like I think jump scary moments, but lots of times I think it's just to feel like you just your head's kind of pulsing. I love just even the locks of the door. Like when someone locks the door, it's like it just. I guess it invokes like a creepy like campfire story type of way. Telling them when people are like, oh, and the guy with the claw came up and stuff like that's why. Like, and this is just like a very rated R version of that, but it's very like. All the sound design I like, even if it's very over the top, I like that they chose it for the entire movie and stuff like that. Like even one of my favorite shots is when they first pull up, and I love it because you know it's probably just some guy on the side swinging it, but when they pull up and the shot is the car is in the distance and you got that swing and it's just going back and forth, and they got like it's loud crickety and stuff like that, but it's just like there's no wind, there's nothing going on, but it's just this chair is swinging back and forth. But I love that just like these little choices that makes the aura of the cabin and around it feel, everything feels lively and out to get you in a sense. So
and like later on in the film when they would do multiple like shots of the cabin, but just like the wind is hitting it and it's just like it's like they're in like ghost town at that point. Yeah. Like it's just it's very like low visibility and just you have like the little like window flaps, I guess, like hitting the cabin. It's I agree with the sound design. The screeches can definitely be a little bit much at parts. I was finishing this movie this morning and Shay just like heard it. She's like, I don't even want to know what the hell you're watching. It was just like like it was like just peak, like all of the possessed ones are just like screeching all at the same time. So it's like, oh yeah, no, just some Evil Dead podcast stuff. You get it.
I'm glad we've I think for most houses I see that we've retired window flaps, you know, because those would I imagine be creepy sounds. But I don't see window flaps anymore, which was what was even the point of them? Just to pull them over your window for like to darken it up, I guess, right? That's what the point
I guess
is.
So yeah.
Big storm. We got blinds now. We got blinds.
I'd use a couple of window flaps. Pretty good.
Of course you would. Taylor, this guy.
Yeah, you're the guy that's muting your own TV. Yeah.
Well, you guys using glass, you know, when the fucking fog mist thing creatures flying at you, the deadite force, you gotta seal those in and then it won't be able to get in there. So
I'm fucked either way. If they want me, they're getting me.
Pretty much.
I got too many windows, you know, that's the problem. They're breaking through and stuff like that.
I'm already in the basement. I'm like with the demon. So
yeah. I got a big tree in the backyard too, so
that like before shit kind of like hit the fan, they were alluding to it, but like at the beginning when they were driving and there's just it was very random, very peculiar. These two guys were on the sidewalk and like they were Scott was honking.
I totally forgot like, about that.
Not honking at you jackasses. Very weird.
That character had some of the funniest dialogue for me though, because it was just like the most eye-rolly, cheesy, like douchebag lines when it was like, yeah, like, I'm not honking at you assholes. Or like another weird one was like it's Ash's car, but they had like Scott driving it, which is just weird to me. I feel like if it's my car, I'm probably gonna be the one driving. But that's
tired,
besides the point.
Long
but
trip,
he's just
right?
like Yeah, that's fair. But he's just like shit talking his car. He's like, your piece of shit car just like turn it on its own. He's like, that doesn't make sense. I just got it checked in yesterday. It's like, what the hell?
You better get it checked again.
Yeah, that's just so random to me. And then the other great classic line from him. Well, I mean, Taylor already mentioned a good one when he's like, it's your girlfriend. I'm going out there on my own. But when the basement door opens up, and I can't remember if it was Cheryl or Linda or whoever it was, it's just like, I think it's an animal. He's like, just like huge, like just flamboyant laugh, and he's just like, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life." Just belittling.
And then
everyone
a second later,
him.
He's like, "Yeah, it probably was an animal." You know, like, you're probably right. Yeah.
That guy just never ceases to disappoint with the just asshole lines that he brings.
Thank God they didn't pick up those hitchhikers, though. You know, they dodged a bullet, those hitchhikers, because they might have
fucking hated they ever.
They might have had to stop at the cabin and.
I totally forgot about that scene, Taylor, but I felt like when I was watching it, I thought that there was something sinister about the truck that was oncoming, because I feel like you can't see the person that's in there. Like, they make it seem like it's some sort of, you know, possessed being, or
and they have creepy music with it too.
Yeah, they're alluding to something, right? And then it's just like never really comes up again, so that's kind of an interesting moment.
Well, I don't even know. I'd have to go back and maybe we should pull this up at one point, like what the trailers were for this in the 80s. So I just wonder if there was a way of like,
fun to do, yeah.
I wonder if there was a way that you're wondering like, hey, what is the plot of this movie? And I imagine many times like, oh, the scary hitchhikers or something like that. Like that could have been something. Maybe they're trying to allude to that. Like, oh, this might be something that's set up to it. Like not supernatural, but that is. But maybe the trailers are just, I guarantee the trailers, they got to have the monsters and stuff like that. I will have to look at it. But but yeah, I guess like we kind of talked about, but starts are just there for the trip. And then Cheryl's one here and stuff. And then, yeah, like, Dylan, you're not wrong about the tree sequence. It's not. I think you could go for more applied for it. I don't mind the choice because it's one of those, like I said, it feels like a very weird, like, high horror where it's just like, okay, we're going to take something you'd never thought of. And I just remember as, like, a youth seeing it and not exactly knowing what was going on. Now I do, but as a youth,
I didn't know what was happening.
I just was like, this tree has her. And then obviously, then, like, a breast pops on. And then, like,
yeah, exactly. That's the part. Too, where it's like, oh, of course it's ripping her clothes off and all this stuff. It's
It is gratuitous.
It's so cringe.
Yeah, and it is very, like, it fits right with the 80s, because 80s is the peak genre of, like, it's going to be naked. With, like, if you can get a girl naked, you're going to have it in a horror movie. So
yeah, maybe I just haven't seen, like, enough of those movies, because I'm, as many people know who've listened to Geekverse for many years, like, a lot of these kind of older horror things, like, I just totally passed me by. It's really more in the Geekverse era that I've been watching things, but of course that's more modern things. So maybe if I had seen a bunch of these movies before, it's something that wouldn't have stood out, but it would just, yeah, it was just particularly weird and gross for me. It added absolutely nothing. It did not ascend the quality of this thing at all. It was just strange.
Yeah, I think it's like I said before, they're trying to just shock you and trying to make you feel like, oh, that's something I haven't seen before. But yeah, the 80s, like, that's Friday the 13th, that's Halloween, and that's like pure sex, drugs, rock and roll, as far as like women are constantly nude. There's constant sex scenes. They're getting killed during sex scene. It's like the complete, there's like, I don't think exactly the same era, but it's like close to like Last House on the Left and Spit on Your Grave, where the plot is like these women getting sexual abuse and they come back to kill people. So I feel like this is very much like the way Tarantino 90s made that movie, and everyone tried to make like crime dramas like that. The 80s were a lot of people just riffing off of like, let's do a lot of like shocking stuff and let's like show a lot of nudity. Not lots of male nudity. You'll get some male butt, but no male nudity in here and stuff. But yeah, tree thing happens. And then I guess that's the thing that I like about, not necessarily that scene, but it just escalates very fast. I feel like other than the beginning, it moves around a bit. You get the tape, and I love the guy's voice on the tape. I love, like, it's again, that kind of Saturday night, like, creepy storytelling element. I like that. But I think that's what I enjoy, that it doesn't, I can't even remember what the actual runtime is, but it does not feel like it takes
it's
too
short.
Long.
It's short, hour
to get 20,
I think, or like hour 25, something
yeah,
like
it's
that.
Pretty short.
Let's see, yeah, hour 25. Yeah, and that's, it doesn't feel like, even if there's things you dislike, I think there's things, like, it doesn't feel like there's like a wasted moment as far as we get into. Because when the shit hit the fan, it goes quick, and we do lose the characters quite often pretty fast, you know, like they're dropping like flies. So it's a not maybe an easy watch, but it's a quick watch. So I like the pacing, the escalation, everything like that of it.
Yeah, I mean, of course it's a very classic thing where Cheryl's the character who's already been the most freaked out, like when the cellar door pops open, just everything, she's been the most freaked out, so it makes the least sense that she would be the one to run off into the woods at night. It makes no sense, but of course that is like a very tropey thing, so I'm used to that. I did like the sequence when she's in the cabin and like the clock is being all weird. It's glitching out. Mm. And she was drawing, but then she starts just like, you know, she's becoming possessed and she essentially draws like the Book of the Dead. I thought the acting she had on that of like her arm twitching out was pretty good. So I liked that, that moment. And that was very much the turn for her character. And then I think shortly after that is when we get her floating in the window. I thought that looked really good. To me, that was maybe the standout visual moment of the whole thing. And there's some good stuff, like especially for the budget that they had and what they were working with. But I thought that looked really good. Her just floating in the window was very creepy.
Yeah, for sure. Something I wanted to mention when you brought up the tape there, Travis. I feel like this is definitely something that I see in so many type of horror movies, especially ones that like place in a house or something that like bad shit happened here, and then this is where our new cast is. I've seen this so many times, but it'll never really fall short for me. I think is when they find those sort of tapes, and it's just like, we found a cabin in the woods, and then as he keeps describing, it's like it just gets more and more like fucked up, where it's like, oh yeah, and the only way you can do it is like dismembering them. But like just picturing like the characters in that situation is just like, shit, like, is this real? Did this actually happen in here? Mm. I feel like that's like a horror movie trope that it always works for me. It's always just like a creepy concept of like, especially, you know, like I go to Airbnbs like with some friends or whatever at a cabin, and it's just like, imagine finding something like that. I would have been totally freaked out. So I like the way that was done. And you shout out the voice actor, whoever was on the tape. He had he sounded like a professor, and like that nice soothing voice to him.
Mm. Well, you have a cabin, don't you, Travis? Or should we all be worried?
Well, that's why I want to do the horror movie.
We're going to pull up. It's going to be this exact set.
Yeah. Oh, it's fine. Don't worry.
The swing. Swing's going back and forth.
Yeah. But, I just was shocked because I was scrolling down. I even forgot that I was rated NC-17. So that's a day where it's just like, oh, boy. But I just love the quote on the poster. The most ferociously original horror film of the year, Stephen King.
All right.
The other one I saw was The Ultimate Experience in Grueling Horror.
It's back. It's back. It's back. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Let me check on my notes. But anything specific scenes-wise, moments-wise to shout out? The pencil always fucking gets me, too. That's just like a, like the...
And like when he checks the wound later, and it just like the Venom symbiote essentially just like takes over, and then she just like springs up like, "Don't wake up, Daddy."
Yeah.
when Cheryl is like gnawing her hand off like that, that is very visceral, very nasty. I actually really liked the stop motion of them melting. I think you mentioned, Travis, it gets maybe a bit too fantastical, and I can agree with that, but I did really like the look of it and just the melting in the ground, and they throw in that kind of moldy sort of colors, and it's all gross, and the cockroaches are popping out. Who knows where the cockroaches came from? Just immediately.
There was a snake in there, too. It was like a little like gardener snake or something that was just sitting there. I'm like, okay, that's a weird detail to add.
Yeah, I liked that scene, though.
And there was like a mashed potato thing, something that came out of like
I was like, that's like minced garlic or something. Come on.
Yeah, that one was too far.
Ash just got some meal after. He's like, look, I got a snake on a potato.
Oh, and you're bringing it further.
Did you guys like I always love, because it works enough for me, but when Ash is like hitting Cheryl with the shovel, but then they like change it to the dummy Cheryl, and it's like the stand-in. I really like it.
Goofy.
It is so goofy, and it stands out, but it's almost because they're possessed. I can go with it, but man, I get a good laugh every time I see that thing. So
sure. I guess maybe my last note here is that I was pretty surprised at the ending, that the ending is just like a direct cliffhanger of the, once again, the dead, like, first-person perspective flying towards Ash. He turns around briefly, and then it just cuts there. Because I feel like lower-budget thing, Sam Raimi is kind of an unknown at this point. Who knows if he is going to do another one of these things. So I thought it was pretty bold to end it in a very cliffhangery way like that. So it was cool.
And I think that's why I like it, because it is in that aspect, but you can also take it as like they just get Ash and he also still dies, you know, like no matter what, like he gets out, but
that's fair. Yeah.
It's over because he gets out and this thing grabs him right away, and that doesn't make sense because he did the dismemberment. I don't know, but again, I think they kind of give you some canon reasons later on, but that doesn't affect this one because it should just be the solo film. And it's like, well, and I don't know, does that still come back to he did the dismemberment and all this stuff, but because he did get attacked or touched or anything like that. That's why it always has like a link on them or things like that. So, and I love the ending. And that's like a very Sam Raimi, old school Sam Raimi would always end on some character yelling or screaming. He brought that back for Multiverse of Madness when Strange got the eye. Mm. They do that same shot where it goes hard on Benedict and he yells and he yells into it. So that's like a nice little Raimi trope there. So
I love the look of the book. I think they changed the appearance of the book, if I remember correctly, from this one to the next movie, and maybe all the other ones.
I think they do in all of them. They change the look.
Well, because there's technically they might change the look, but there's technically three books. The Ash's continuity has this book, Mia, which is it's not even a remake. The newest one that has come out, there's a book there, and then Evil Dead Rise apparently has the third book, because there is a moment where they talk, they show like there's three different books and they're all connected.
The Darkhold is the
new
book.
Very, very similar. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why in Evil Dead Rise we're seeing the final book, you know.
This one to me, it just, like, it looks, at least from the other ones that I've seen, like it looks just the most basic. Like, it's just like a small little face, but at the same time, it makes it so much creepier to that point, because it, like, I could believe that this was made out of like a human face or something. Like, it reminds me of like Leatherface or like that sort of situation. So yeah, just a very, very freaky book. And especially from the first time that you see the book, air quotes, because like you don't actually see the book, it's just from that drawing, and you just see like a little bit of a face on it, but it's like, what actually is this? And then of course you see it later on, and it's just creepy concept made out of human flesh, just pure evil, just terrifying concept.
If people want to know, I was like in elementary school, that was, I had a book that I had notes in there with that. I had like a replica, like that they sold at the store of that. Whoa. And that's what I brought to elementary school.
Of course, you're the kid with the human skin.
That says everything about, you know. It was so funny though. The rubber book, it had such a great sensation. It felt so good to have. Like, it was one of those, like, you just really, like, oh man, this is great finger.
You're just rubbing
right
your
here.
Human Facebook.
100%. I was, and it had like the little
just locking
teeth
eyes with your teacher as you're rubbing it.
The teeth were so, I don't think anyone would know, but it was just like, oh, it was great.
I'm surprised that was still like around when you were in school and stuff like that.
Well, I think because it is, but my dad found it because like he knows I'm a fan of that stuff. But like, I think it is. That's the good stuff about when movies become cult classics as well, because the merchandise is always around. Like Hot Topic always has something where, and I don't know if there was like a. Well, even then though, maybe it could have been at the time, because when does Army Darkness come out? That's the third one, and that was
might
more
have been
of
in the
90s,
I guess.
Yeah, that was 1992, but so no, I was not alive yet. So I don't know where my dad got it. I have to ask him, but I remember getting it for Christmas.
Nice.
And it was just the feel. It was like such a nice rubber feel.
It's a real skin book that he got.
Yeah, yeah. I went to a cabin one day and I found this book for you, Travis.
Here's this tape recorder. And you're like, I don't have a way to play this.
Yeah,
we talked about some of the gore already, but like just shouting out a couple scenes in particular. You did the pencil one already, Travis. But when I think it's when Ash is like versus Scott, and he just like squishes his eyeballs in, and they just like gush out. And then, I think after that, he like pulls something, I don't even remember what it is, like out of Scott, and it's literally just like open the floodgates, just like so much blood pours out of it. I definitely forgot about just how much liquid is in this movie, I guess is a good way to say it, because like Bruce Campbell just gets so coated in like blood and brownish, whitish looking liquids at times. Like, it's just, he is just encased. He's like looking like a Nickelodeon Choice Award or something like that by the end
of it. Especially near the end when he's finding the camera and like you have that. And I love the shot when it's the camera and it's the blood. And that's where I think the ending gets very, we're just going to do a bunch of just random creepy shit. Because like, why is this camera turning on? Why is it blood? But I love all that stuff. And yeah, it just looks like he's been through hell. And I guess he did go through hell, you know?
So, he really did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the gore. And like, again, that's where like the practical effects, it's shining in those moments, like the pencil, and you just see like the gush coming out of it, or like when Bruce Campbell is outside, and like I already talked about, like when he's getting his like leg just clawed at, and it's just like peeling the skin back, like it's just like really weak orange peel or something, and it's just like right to the flesh. It's like, God, this is just so gruesome. But I normally hate this sort of stuff, but I think it's just because I have fond memories of being absolutely scared to shit back in the day.
Anything else? I did find a trailer, so I was gonna pull that up.
Oh, nice! I don't think I
got anything.
No, I don't have anything.
All right, I pulled it up, and then I got some fun trivia about how the shooting situation was not the best, but they made it work. So let's see here. Full screen that. I don't know why the screen is blue. Oh, give me a second here. Where is it?
Evil Dead.
I'll try. Grindhouse. I'll make sure the sound's not too loud. Don't want those squeals going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for Taylor's sake.
Yeah, trailer HD, 1080p. Guarantee this is not 1080p trailer. They can say it's 1080p, but...
No, I watched this thing in 4x3 resolution, yeah. Not 1080p.
They even show the tree.
Oh my god.
I'm surprised about, like, how much they show in a trailer already, you know? Like... Remember I said they'd show the monsters? Yeah, right away.
Yeah, this is nothing like a modern trailer, which is, you know, not surprising, but it's interesting to go back to this.
Yeah, and it's just, but I feel like they're showing you, like, almost all the movie here. Like, not, like, in the sequence of, like, start to finish, but the big scares, and, but no one would have prepared you for, oh, sorry, Taylor, you might want to mute this, because your house is gonna
he's got his Apple headphones in there.
Apple headphones. But,
I don't care what happens to her.
I made it into the trailer.
Oh yeah, the chainsaw. I forgot about that. It's pretty iconic in this series, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is such a weird trailer.
All
yeah, the flaps.
That's why you gotta go to Bernie's in Kelowna. Like, they play the trailers, and like even they like the Star Wars New Hope trailer. It's just like the most like. Just the things they show. She's like, how did people go? Like, how are people hyped to go see Star Wars: A New Hope when you see this trailer? So, and that shot is like that the close up. That's like the classic. I feel like I see all the time in previews. They show like the whole ending here and everything.
Yeah, they show a ton, man. Holy shit!
They're literally about to show. They literally show like the last shot there.
Crazy.
Well, there you go. So there's a trailer from 1981. So. Let's see here. The cabin, I said the budget already, the cabin used as film was also lodging 13 crew members with several people sleeping in the same room. Living conditions were terrible. The crew frequently argued. The cabin didn't have plumbing, so the actors went days without showering and fell ill frequently in the freezing weather. By the end of the production, they were burning furniture to stay warm.
Wow.
So that
crazy.
Is fucking guerrilla filmmaking.
Make a movie on the production of this
they
movie.
Should. They should. Maybe for legal reasons they don't want to. at the end of principal shooting in Tennessee, the crew put together a little time capsule package and buried it inside the fireplace at the cabin as a memento of the production to whomever found it. The cabin has since been destroyed. It got burned down, but the fireplace is still intact. They have this fireplace in this cabin built specifically for the movie. That's the only thing that's still standing. Apparently no one's actually said where this cabin is. Sam Raimi's joke that he's the one that burnt it down. Apparently it was just some teens hanging out. But the reason people stopped revealing the situation is because I guess there was lots of graffiti when people did find, like, lots of just Evil Dead stuff put around and everything. But yeah, so it's burnt down and just somewhere in the woods. I'm not sure if it's still there, but just that fireplace they made for the movie was the only thing standing. So that's kind of fun and creepy and stuff.
That's like
that.
Yeah, it's got its own creepy story to it. Do they have like a tape in there?
Well, yeah, what did they bury? You know, what did they bury? Yeah. So the original script called for all the characters to be smoking marijuana when they were listening to the tape. The actors decided to try this for real, and the entire scene had to be reshot due to their uncontrollable behavior. So imagine it just didn't go well.
Just burn some budget there, some valuable
100%.
budget. 100%. Plus the amount of money they spent on weed. is that part of the budget, do you think?
Yeah, to get that in there, yeah. The blood is a combination of Caro syrup, non-dairy creamer, and red food coloring. At one point, Bruce Campbell's shirt that he wears was so saturated with the fake blood, after drying it by the fire, he went to go put it on. It was so solidified that it broke when he tried to put it on.
Wow.
So, according to how he's covered, it was just like raw. He just put on, just ripped apart there, so... I talked about this after completing the filmography or the photography of the winter of 1979 to 1980. Most of the actors left production. However, there was still much of the film to be completed. The second half of the film features Bruce Campbell and various stands in for fake synths. So there you go. It's just people that helped out to replace the actors who left. The eerie wind noise in the movie was recorded by Sam Raimi. He first heard it through his bedroom window. So it's literally just him having some audio recording device at his home with a next to his window. So that's what that is. He originally wanted to title the movie Book of the Dead, but producer Ivan Sharpo changed the title to Evil Dead for fear the kids would be turned off by seeing a movie with literacy reference in the title. And then the last one, the film ran out of money and only half of it was completed in the winter of 1980. In order to complete it, Sam Raimi, Rob Tapert, and Bruce Campbell did everything they did to complete it, from taking out high-interest bank loans to borrowing money from friends and family to even making cold calls to businesses around their state of Michigan. The cold calls worked in that they actually got catering, gasoline, other necessities for the cast and crew needed. And that's just a few of them. But like I said, that's one opposite of like the John Wick ones where it's just all about the training. There's just a plethora of just notes and stuff that you could read for days. Like, man, like the fact that it got made, got completed, and actually made these guys' career, to like Bruce Campbell made a living out of this. Sam Raimi went on to go direct Spider-Man, all this stuff. Like the fact that it worked is kind of crazy. So yeah, go read that. And I'm sure there probably is some documentary, but I'd love like a full, like really big tier documentary done of like maybe the series. But yeah, Dil Muss, any final thoughts? I'm excited to see what you feel about too. I'm not promising it's going to be like the changing of the revolution and stuff like that, but I don't think you'll be revisiting this anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. I mean, even what you mentioned of them leaning more into the comedy, I think will actually work a lot for me, a lot more for me, and that'll fit the tone of what this thing is. So yeah, I am curious to go see more of these things, and it is kind of an interesting history lesson to go back and see the first like feature movie from Sam Raimi, who, you know, I love his superhero stuff, but never gone to see like where his roots were, especially like even, yeah, the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness element of like the horror elements of that and where he came from with this stuff. So
yeah,
I'm glad I watched this, even if I didn't really enjoy it. And hopefully I can enjoy more of the second one and Army of Darkness and the remakes and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. You cross off the list. You've seen Evil Dead, you know, it's off the bucket list. So Kirk and Patzer.
Yeah. You know, thinking about, I don't even think I've seen Army of Darkness now that I'm, I mean,
it's the
I,
one
I,
I've
I
seen just, the least. For
yeah.
Me.
I bounced on the IMDb and it just did not ring any bells there. I've definitely seen the first two and the remake. So this is going to be such a fun retro to go through, especially just like hearing Dylan's thoughts on someone that's never seen this before. it's fun to have, my gosh, pardon me, a companion, I guess, on this journey. So yeah, but for this movie, like I said, like it just has such a special place in my heart. I see the aging of this movie and like the cheesiness that comes with it, and especially just, yeah, like the tree scene. It's not really nice to see a scene like that nowadays, but like just for how fucked up of a situation that is, I guess it fits this fucked up movie that was made from the 80s. But I think this is going to be one that, although I don't revisit this movie like a lot, this is just, like I already mentioned, like this is just such a household favorite amongst my family. At least me and my dad will rewatch it every once in a while, and I'm excited to do another Evil Dead watch along with him. On that one, I think I'm gonna just have to give this movie like a 10 out of 10. Honestly, whoa. For me, it's such a special place in my heart. I love it so much. Maybe it's not a perfect. Maybe like a 9.5. Now that I stew on it a little bit more, I'm curious how I feel about like the other ones that I haven't seen in a long time, especially like Army of Darkness. There you go. Man, done a lot of cast today. But so yeah, I'm excited to just see how those feelings hit on those other ones. But yeah, this one is just great nostalgic memories. Watched it way too young. Definitely gave me some nightmares back in the day. But yeah.
Day film.
I've been really spending the last like 10 minutes here thinking of what I would actually rate this. It's not something like, this was one that I would not go back to. Like, out of all the Evil Dead movies, I know which ones I would go back to. And so factoring that into my rating, I'd probably go maybe like a 7 out of 10. And that's me being generous, because I was thinking like a 6 to 6.5. But like there are some very cool things that I think do set the tone in this movie, and I will give it that 7 just to kind of put it in that more positive spectrum, because I think if you like these like OG kind of horror flicks, I think this is definitely something that would be up your alley then. And there's just, yeah, if you've enjoyed everything else Evil Dead, then go back and watch Where It All Started for sure, because there's a lot that they did in this movie to make it work with limited access to resources and stuff at the time that they had. So yeah,
I'm gonna do what Kirkland did. I'm gonna stick with my 10 out of 10. I gotta drop the 10. Ooh. There I've again, it doesn't always come down to like that's what I would critically give it, just the feel in the gut. Watch it so many times, I have a good time with it. I guess I don't want to spoil any rankings or stuff like that. Plus, I haven't seen the new movie, but it sets the foundation. I like what they're going for, and it's just at times a creepy, messed up movie that sticks with me. Like, just certain images are burned in my head, and yeah, again, with that runtime too, I feel like it's a nice just snack size horror venture you just pop on if you're not watching all four. And I've done that many times where I've just watched this one. There's some franchise whatnot where you go, oh, I'm gonna watch them all. Many times I just watch Evil Dead 1 and then I'm good. It's not saying I don't like any of the other ones. There's some great stuff coming up, but a lot of times I could just solo this one. But yeah, 10 for me. I love this movie. It's a good time despite some issues or some cheesiness along the way. But yeah, we'll be back next week with Evil Dead 2, a very interesting type of movie instead of what they do with this franchise. And yeah, promise you it'll not be boring.
See you. Bye-bye.